It's July.
Right.
That means we are in the month of training camp. The start of the 2024 NFL season draws ever nearer as we kick off this episode of Believe in Titans. It is kind of a downtime, not a lot of developments since last we chatted. We, of course, being John Glennon of the Nashville Post. John, how are you?
I am well. Happy fourth.
Thank you, sir. I am David Beauclair of the Nashville Banner, and as John has duly noted, we are recording this on July 4th. Happy Independence Day to all of you, and happy Independence Weekend. I assume many of you are going to be enjoying a long weekend as you take time to listen to this episode. And we appreciate that as always. Of course, you can't let the 4th of July pass as a Tennessee Titans fan, observer, whatever, without recognizing the untimely passing of Steve McNair in a bizarre and eye-opening set of circumstances. It was 15 years ago now that happened. The Titans will be in their 25th year as the Titans this fall, and I know that the administration and the office folks in the office, whatnot, have been making plans for a 25th anniversary team. There's no question, John, is there, that Steve McNair will be the quarterback, the number one quarterback of the Titans' 25th anniversary team, right? I mean, Ryan Tannehill had a good run here recently, but I don't think you can say anything he did eclipsed the memories or the success maybe that McNair had. Vince Young, of course, had his moments. Marcus Mariota had his moments, but not close otherwise, right? I mean, McNair is still the standard by which Will Levis and anybody who comes after him is going to be measured, don't you think?
Think so. I mean, you could make your case for Ryan Tannehill in terms of numbers, but I think certainly part of that is the game has changed as well, over the years too. So there's a lot of quarterbacks now that are putting up bigger numbers that maybe like Steve McNair back in the day, those type of numbers don't necessarily compare. But when you take into account what he did for the team, what he did for the franchise, both in terms of his leadership, his ability to perform in clutch situations, the toughness, resiliency, and the skins on the wall in terms of the number of times the Titans made playoff runs. I think certainly you have to give him over the edge as numero uno, even though I think Ryan Tannehill is probably likely to forever be a little bit underrated by the Titans. And he has certainly did put up some tremendous numbers during his career here, but for the production and the terms of in terms of the big achievements and so forth, I think you have to give Steve McNair the edge.
And there's the thrills too. It's interesting. Both those guys had a great running back that sort of was the focus of the offense, right? Steve McNair had Eddie George, Ryan Tannehill had Derrick Henry, but it felt like much more so that Tannehill relied on Henry and needed Henry, whereas McNair and George were sort of two halves of a coin and delivered different sorts of moments. But you can think of any number of really big moments that Steve McNair had, whether it was getting windmilled down by the goal line at Nissan Stadium, which I think was against Pittsburgh, or the game in Pittsburgh when he didn't play or didn't start because he had the chest contusion and could hardly breathe. And then Neil O'Donnell gets a concussion late in that game, and McNair comes off the bench and leads them to a game-winning touchdown. There was the really long touchdown run against Tampa Bay on a Monday night game down there in Tampa. There was I mean, take your pick. Of course, the moments in the Super Bowl, him shaking off Kevin Carter and completing the pass that set up the last play of that. I mean, you can go on and on where these, whereas I don't think Tannehill had those moments that galvanized people. You can even go back to the very first game in Nissan Stadium when Titans were playing terrible against Cincinnati, and McNair gets hurt, and O'Donnell goes in there for a little while. Fans cheer. O'Donnell gets hurt. McNair comes back in. Fans boo, and then McNair ultimately comes back and leads a game-winning drive there. The Titans win that game by one, 36-35, and it's almost like that one game, you didn't know it at the time, but it sort of set, it was sort of a prologue in a way for everything that was to come with McNair over the next six seasons with the Titans, from the fact that, he wasn't always the prettiest quarterback in the NFL, but he found a way to win, often did so late, and often overcoming injuries and playing through and showing his toughness and whatnot. And then, of course, there's just the simple fact that he was the co-MVP of the league in 2003. And, when you, again, when I say he wasn't the prettiest quarterback, he shared that award with Peyton Manning. And when you think about Peyton Manning and Steve McNair, you talk about different ways to skin a cat. I mean, those are two guys who played the position really, really differently, but in their own ways, both played it spectacularly. So as always, tip of the cap to Steve McNair. Thanks for the memories. It's still a strange thing to think that he's not around, and we don't have to go into the way he passed. Everybody, I'm sure knows that or can read about that if you want to. But it just it will be it, he will forever be part of Nashville Pro, a big part of Nashville Pro sports lore for any number of reasons. So as we come back to the current version of the Titans, we have talked a fair amount this offseason about the offensive line. And I think we all agree that the offensive line is or will be better than last year. From a personnel standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, you would think those two things would mean from a production standpoint. Pro Football Focus, though, Johnny, not they're kind of raining on the Titans fans' parades a little bit. I don't. Again, Pro Football Focus is not strictly opinion. It's analytics based. There's they like to they have. They like to support their assertions with math, and their assertion here recently is that the Titans have the 30th best offensive line in the NFL. And I'll remind you, lest anyone forget, there are 32 teams in the NFL. So 30th, Johnny, not so good in this case. Are you buying that ranking?
Think it's a little harsh, I gotta say. And anyone, I mean, all of us can see, how it might have come about, that the Titans had a bad offensive line last year. We all know 64 sacks allowed, fourth highest in the NFL, and the sack percentage allowed was even worse. They gave up 11.5% sacks on pass attempts, which was the second worst in the league. Behind only the Giants. You look at PFF's grades from last year. Pass blocking, the Titans were 25th. Run blocking, 18th, and overall 20th. So not good. We know this from last year. I can understand where they might say, okay, the Titans were shaky last year. We're going to rank them pretty lowly. But are they trying to tell us that the offensive line somehow got worse than last year? Because I don't buy that in the least. I mean, are they missing the fact that the Titans added with their first overall draft pick, the number 7 pick in the draft, a massive athletic man who will take over the left tackle spot? Now, is there a question about moving from right to left? Yes, but still, all signs, at least very, very early, are that he should be able to hold down that left tackle spot. You know, did PFF also miss out on the fact that Lloyd Cushenberry was signed at center and should provide a huge upgrade, especially in pass protection over Aaron Brewer? Did they miss out on that? Now, again, you know, there are some concerns on the right side. You know, we don't know for sure who's going to be the right guard and the right tackle. But, you know, to me, at worst, you've got Daniel Brunskill, who started most of the games last season at right guard and was solid, not great, but good enough. And he might be bumped by Sadiq Charles. And to me, at worst, at right tackle, you're probably going to get Nicholas Petit-Frere, who was a starter at right tackle for, I think, 15 or 16 games during his rookie year there. So, you know, it certainly could be worse in that situation. So to me, I don't know how you can look at this line and say that line was terrible last year and it's going to be even worse this year. I don't buy that. I can't necessarily tell you all the moves that were made on other offensive lines. But to me, I think the Titans are going to make steps forward. Certainly, not the 30th best offensive line in the NFL.
Yeah, and you start at left guard, say with Peter Skoronski, last year's first round draft pick, who moved from tackle to guard, so he's got a year of experience under his belt playing that position. And oh, by the way, he's probably not going to miss time in the middle of the season with an appendix bursting
If it
this
was, it's
time
going
around,
to be.
right? You know, which not only did that cost him time, but you don't know exactly what it cost him physically. So, but you would have to assume physically he is better. So they're better at that particular spot. Left guard, yes, J.C. Latham's a rookie. Yes, he was a right tackle in college, but he's gonna have to try really hard to be less productive at that position than they were last year, even amidst his growing pains. And as you noted, Lloyd Cushenberry, a proven veteran center guy with a lot of experience there, a much bigger man than Aaron Brewer, who, though, of course, as we noted in a recent podcast too, Pro Football Focus has Aaron Brewer ranked ahead of Lloyd Cushenberry in their center rankings. That one baffles me. But as you look at this offensive line, what's kind of interesting to me, and a lot of times this stuff doesn't mean anything, but in this case, I think it does a little bit. If you look at the Titans roster, they list no one as guards. I mean, they list they there's no one listed as a guard. There's only one person listed as a center. That's Lloyd Cushenberry. And there's only four players listed as tackles. And one of them is Latham. One is Leroy Watson, who they traded with Cleveland to acquire this offseason, and then a couple of undrafted rookies. Everybody else, Daniel Brunskill, Sadiq Charles, who you mentioned, Dylan Raidens, Nicholas Petit-Frere, who you mentioned, Jalen Duncan, last year's seventh round draft pick, who is a big man, I think by all accounts is tech, but all these guys are listed as offensive line, which says to me that there are some moving parts on the right side of this thing, and they're gonna take a look at these guys and try and figure out who fits where, who fits best next to one another. And this could be one of those things. Maybe you're not the best guy at a particular position, but you fit best next to another guy there, and can work together well. We don't know what kind of discussions they're having with these guys in team meetings and whatnot. But Brunskill, who you mentioned, has largely been a forgotten guy to me this offseason. There hasn't been a lot of talk about him for a guy who started 14 games last year, who was one of the bigger free agent signings this team had last year, who came from the San Francisco 49ers, where general manager Rand Carthen was before. So you know that Brunskill has an advocate in personnel meetings. But Brunskill is one of those guys who's fascinating. He was a starter for 2 years in 2020 and 2021 at San Francisco. And then in 2022, oddly, only started two games, but still played more than half the snaps on offense. Every game was getting snaps as an extra tackle, or would go in at guard, and somebody else would slide to a different position. And he's a I don't know that that he's automatically going to lose that spot to Sadiq Charles, but Charles is a guy who's only been a starter for 1 year in this league. Petit Frere, as you mentioned, 2 years in the league, one as a starter. One missed a bunch of time with a suspension. That there's questions there. Dylan Raiden's, of course, we've heard that he's now a guard, not a tackle, but we've seen him play tackle and play fairly well. So I think the whole key to this thing is the right side, and perhaps if people are down on the Titans, it's because you don't know what the right side of this line is going to be. So you're expecting it'll be Charles and Petit Frere most likely? That's what you're looking
That
at?
would be my tentative guess at this point. The way they talked about Sadiq Charles, they really talked him up and made note of the fact that he was a starter really in Washington last year, and until he was kind of sidelined by injury. They like his size. He's a bigger man than Brunskill. They like his power. We know that Brian Callahan has sort of emphasized that. Maybe even more so than we've seen in the past about size on the offensive line. So if I had to guess at this point, I'd say Sadiq Charles at right guard. And at right tackle, maybe it's just because of a lack of real quality options at that point. But I still have to lean towards Nicholas Petit Frere, because again, you're looking at a fairly high draft pick again, who was a starter during his rookie season. I'm not saying he had a great rookie season by any stretch, but he certainly got that experience anyway. Big man, fairly light on his feet as well. And again, I just think the options behind him, to this point, I don't see anybody that's a guy that you say, huh. I want to give a real long look to. Now there are some other possibilities. The Titans have added this offseason Jerron Christian, who was actually more of a left tackle last year. Leroy Watson, who you mentioned, the Titans gave up a draft pick for. Both of those guys have played for Bill Callahan in the past, and Jalen Duncan, another big man. And we shouldn't ignore also John Ojukwu. Who got a lot of significant time during the off season and in mini camp and so forth, partially because of injuries to others, but all accounts he did okay for himself. But the big question for Nicholas Petit Frere right now is just when is he going to be completely healthy? When's he going to be ready? He missed the entire off season, still recovering from that shoulder injury. And that's not obviously the best way to give a first impression to Bill Callahan or to Brian Callahan. So still some questions to be answered there. But at this point, if I have to guess, I'm going with Sadiq Charles at guard and Petit Frere right tackle.
Yeah, and Petit Frere too. Let's say, he came out of Ohio State, played a lot of college football, played at a very high level there. And when you talk about his rookie season, and he wasn't dominant over there. He wasn't, but I think what he was is he was fairly consistent. You didn't see these disastrous performances from him. The way we've seen it left tackle a little too much the last couple of years. He's a smart guy. He was in there prepared and doing the best he could. You would think the extra time, another year, even though he didn't play much last year, it's gotta be worth something to him to have spent that time. So Again, this is the offensive line is going to remain a huge topic for this team until we see that it performs better and significantly better than it did last year. And you wonder too, as great as Derrick Henry was, did he even make that unit look better than it was last year, even though it wasn't particularly good? You know, that with Tony Pollard and Tajae Spears this year, you're not gonna you've got two guys who aren't gonna be running over tacklers if they're met in the hole from time to time. You wouldn't think these guys are gonna be more likely to try and bounce it outside, which sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't. But you know, if they're getting hit in the backfield the way Henry was far too often, I don't know that they're going to be able to make as much out of that as Henry did, but we'll see. Petit Frere, of course, was part of that 2022 draft class, which as it turns out was John Robinson's final draft class. And as John Robinson was wont to do, moved around a bit in the draft that year with some trades. One of them was in the first round to move up with Phil in a trade with the Philadelphia Eagles that, of course, sent AJ Brown there, but got the Titans the 18th overall pick, where they took Treylon Burks. And then in the third round, they moved up to get quarterback Malik Willis at 86 overall. And as you listen to national reporters, folks who cover the league as a whole, those are two names now that come up somewhat regularly as trade possibilities. So, you know, I guess a two-part question here for you, John, as we start to explore this. Number one, should the Titans trade one or both of these guys? And two, what could they possibly get in return for players, neither one of whom who has lived up to his draft position overall, I think you could say at this point.
Yeah, very accurate assessment of both, I think. You know, and how many times have we used the word potential, I think, with both Treylon Burks and Malik Willis, and the word flash. You know, both of these guys have flashed from time to time, but certainly have not secured spaces. You know, certainly not have become regular parts of the team by any stretch. We'll start first for me with Burks, and I can understand, you know, where people from the outside could say, okay, hey, let's move Treylon Burks. You know, the Titans now have, you know, the big three of DeAndre Hopkins, Calvin Ridley, and Tyler Boyd. You know, what do you need Treylon Burks for? Well, let's start there. You know, looking at that argument in the first place, DeAndre Hopkins may only be here one more year. He's only 1 year under contract. Tyler Boyd is a 1 year contract. Calvin Ridley isn't young. So it's not like the Titans have three outstanding young guys who are going to hold down these positions for you know, several years here. Things could change very quickly on the wide receiver front, and the Titans may be needy sooner rather than later at that spot. So that's one of the reasons I say, you know, let's not push the Treylon Burks trade argument too fast. The other is, you know, again, I'll come back to that word potential, and you hate to keep using it, but you know, it's not often you see a guy with these tools and these skills. You know, the speed, the strength, you know, the athletic talents that this guy has. And it hasn't resulted in production yet. You know, he's only played 15 games the first 2 years, 46 catches for 665 yards and all of one touchdown. But you know, again, you see little signs, occasional games that you say, okay, there's that guy that they drafted. And but honestly, you know, I was thinking about this morning, you know, we see more of those flashes, in my way of thinking, in practice, unfortunately. You know, some of the training camps and some of the practices, we say, whoa, this guy is doing some incredible things. We really haven't seen those nearly enough in games, but I still think there is reason for hope. You know, he is a first-round pick. He does have the, the athletic tools that I just mentioned. So maybe if you're Brian Callahan and you're going to come in as an offensive-minded guy, a guy who's known to have a lot of success with passing offenses, you give Treylon Burks that clean slate again. This is a year where Treylon Burks really wouldn't have that much pressure on him, probably because the top three guys are going to get most of the attention. So maybe this is a developmental year for Treylon Burks. I give him that opportunity. If you move him now, I would say, still you're probably looking at no better than a late middle pick, I wouldn't guess, just because he hasn't shown the great production so far. So what can you can sell his potential, but that hasn't been successful so far. So I'm saying hold on to Treylon Burks. On the Malik Willis front, I'm less apt to say, hey, hold on, give this guy another chance because of the potential. To me, I just haven't seen enough, and whether that has been in games, small windows, I know, but in games and in preseason games, or honestly, in training camps, again, we do see some flashes. I mean, we know he is a great athlete. We know he can make big plays, be that with his legs or with his arm. He's got a very strong arm. There's no doubt about that. He's an exciting player, but I just haven't seen enough to warrant a hold on a position where obviously only one player plays. And now, especially that the Titans have added Mason Rudolph as a backup, I just don't see the great value in holding on to Malik Willis because of his potential. Now, I don't think you're going to get much for Malik Willis on the trade market. I would say a sixth or seventh round pick the Titans would probably be happy with, just because he hasn't shown much. And he wasn't necessarily a guaranteed player coming out of the draft to have success. But again, if you can make sure early in training camp that Mason Rudolph is a guy that you can trust, who has gotten the system down, is working well with the wide receivers, why not go for a late round pick and move Malik Willis? I just don't see. What I have witnessed, whether that's in practices or in the small windows games, enough reason to say, hold on a minute, that guy really can be something down the line. Maybe he can. I just haven't seen it so far.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's had some nice moments in the preseasons the last couple of years, but he doesn't seem when teams are game planning and they're actually doing stuff on defense, it really seems to slow him down. And I mean, he's a project to begin with. Maybe he's just a package guy. Maybe that's what he's going to be in the NFL, where you have a specific package of plays that take advantage of his particular skill set. And I don't see Brian Callahan as being a guy who would carry that sort of package into a game, really. I think I think they signed Mason Rudolph, as you mentioned, to kind of do the same things that Will Levis would do, maybe not quite as well, but I think they're looking for a particular type of quarterback with this offense, and Malik Willis is probably not it. I do think there are coaches out there who would be happy to have a Malik Willis and sort of take advantage of things he do. Either one of the Harbaughs come to mind. Pete Carroll comes to mind. I could even see Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh maybe coming up with something for him. I agree with you. I don't think you're going to get much for him. If you get a sixth round offer, I think you take that and you run with it and say absolutely, and you move on from that. Certainly you'll be able to find a third quarterback for your practice squad. I don't think the Titans are going to have any inclination to carry three quarterbacks on the active roster, especially now with the rules that allow you again to carry a third emergency quarterback into game day. So We've seen it here the last couple of years that there's been a lot of movement with that third quarterback position. You can find somebody and have them ready to do whatever needs to be done if it ends up that they have to get into a game. Burks is interesting to me though. Burks is a guy that you can do some different things with. It's sort of a do-over with him. He was supposed to come in and be the next AJ Brown, and he has shown some nice skill, but as we've talked about, hasn't produced consistently enough in games. Now, with Hopkins, Ridley, and Boyd sort of as what you would consider a traditional set of three wide receivers, you can almost, if you're the Titans, play around with Treylon Burks. See what you can do with him, right? Can he be a Deebo Samuel type guy where you put him in the backfield some and hand him the ball and or get it to him a lot in the jet sweep actions, and because he's good with the ball in his hands, there's no question about that. Do you even line him up like as a slot tight end almost? And do some of those things with him. I think there's a certain freedom for Treylon Burks right now to where, okay, this whole thing is he's not going to be the next AJ Brown. Nobody's going to be the next AJ Brown here probably. It took 20 some years for this franchise in Tennessee to find that guy. You're not just going to get another one anytime you want one. So I think Treylon Burks, assuming he stays, that burden is gone from him now, and because he is sort of different in terms of what we've seen than those other three guys, that they might as well just experiment with him. And I can see a scenario if he's on the roster throughout the season where some games he gets four snaps on offense. Some games he gets 40 if all goes well and they find things that he can do and create matchups with him that way. Now, that being said, if you get deep into training camp and some team has a couple wide receivers blow out knees and they come and they say, "Look, we need a wide receiver. It looks like you guys have plenty of them. Can we talk trade for Treylon Burks?" And they offer you something in the third or fourth round range, then I think you would absolutely have to look at it. But for right now, I think training camp in the preseason ought to be all about let's just get creative with this guy and see what exactly he can do, and what exactly is Treylon Burks to the Tennessee Titans offense? Because the offense that featured AJ Brown and that was looking for an AJ Brown is no more. So we'll see. It's always an interesting thing as we move toward the end of this, though, that it seems like every year as you get into training camp, deeper into training camp, the discussion of the 53-man roster, how it's going to take shape, always emerges, and one of the big talking points is how many wide receivers do you keep? Because this is a pass happy league, but then teams always need to keep extra linebackers and safeties for special teams. There's a minimum number of offensive linemen you have to have. Wide receiver seems to be a position that is kind of negotiable around the league. You'll see some teams that keep as few as four. You'll see some teams that keep as many as seven or eight. So as we look at this thing, you've got three proven guys. You've got a fourth and a first round pick in Treylon Burks, John. You've got Kyle Phillips, who is a recent draft pick, but has had his injury problems. What is the number you're looking at as you look at this wide receiver group right now?
If I had to go with a number right now, I'd probably go with six that they keep. I look back at what the Bengals started with the season with last year. They started with six, obviously the big three of Chase, Higgins, and Boyd, and then three others, Charlie Jones, Trenton Irwin, and Andre Yosivas. So, if it's a similar situation here, you could certainly see six. And that is going to make for some significant competition. I think, four are certainly locks, as I said earlier, and we've just discussed. I do think they hold on to Treylon Burks. I think he's the kind of guy that maybe gets a clean slate and another chance to fulfill some of that first round potential. So that's four receivers right there. To me, number five is probably, and a lot of Titans fans will cringe, probably NWI. Nick Westbrook-Ikhina. He gets a bad rap sometimes, but I think as a fifth receiver, I think that's where you want a guy like that. He's versatile. He can play all the positions. He can play slot, which some guys aren't so good at, and he's a very good special teamer. And really, the less he's playing offense, perhaps the more he can be playing special teams too. So I think a valuable guy to have, very intelligent. But then if you look at number six, you got to say it's going to be Jaquan Jackson unless he's an absolute bust. He's a drafted guy. They want him for his returnability. He's a slot guy. He's got speed. So to me, again, unless he's an absolute bust, I think he's number six, and I think he has a leg up on even Kyle Phillips because he does some of the same things, slot guy, return guy, but he's a more recent draft pick, and he's coming in with this new coaching staff.
Yeah, the wild card in there to me is Kyaris Jackson, a rookie from last year who many people considered draftable. The Titans got him as an undrafted guy. He's similar to Jaquan Jackson, a guy who will factor into the return game. Not the biggest guy, but a little bigger than Jackson. In fact, Kyaris Jackson is 5'11", 196. Jaquan Jackson is 5'9", 188. So there's I think Kyle Phillips is a guy who certainly factored into the return game early, but didn't do it well, and with his injury history, Kyle Phillips to me looks like a guy who doesn't have a spot. I don't know how this team keeps seven wide receivers, and then certainly there's fan favorite Mason Kinsey. But it's an interesting group. It's certainly a better group. We'll see how it plays out, and as we look ahead to the next episode.